And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalm, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Willen. Johannes, how you doing?
Oh, man. That was a brutal week of hockey, if you're a Canadiens fan. I mean, only punctuated by Cole the Goal Caulfield. But quick question. Habs need some more help on the right wing, and they need some more goals. Any ideas how they could get two birds stoned at once?
I mean, clearly, yeah, Cole Caulfield definitely, his debut with the Laval Rocket was definitely as advertised. The guy's got three goals and an assist in two games. He's got two game winners. So, yeah, as a team that's apparently starving for offense all of a sudden, really starving for offense, he definitely looks like the Canadiens can use him. But I don't know, after watching this week of hockey, do we want to expose Cole Caulfield to the Montreal Canadiens? That's a bigger question, I think.
That's a great question. I mean, as fans, what have we done to deserve this team at this point? No greater opportunity spent to the cap. We have experience at all positions with obviously a few problems. But this team, I mean, it was humiliating last night to watch that team. I had to turn it off. I never turn off Canadiens games. I had to turn it off because I honestly thought I could feel my fandom dying as I watched that team implode. Petrie was bad. Weber was bad. Drouin was bad. Allen didn't have a great night. I mean, it was shockingly, shockingly bad in all ways on a night when they needed to bounce back because their last two outings looked horrible. Connor, what is going on in Montreal? Just tell me, what's going on?
I mean, the vibe here is obviously not great, but I mean, it's, you know, always, if you live in Montreal, you know that the fans, the Habs fans, are always teetering on, you know, ecstasy or devastation. So, you know, it doesn't take much to push them one way or the other. I don't know, man. It was pretty, last night was, I mean, the first period was the first period. It was whatever, you know, nothing really happened. It was a struggle. It's that second period, man. It's like they forgot how to play hockey. You know, the Jeff Petrie giveaway, Adam, like he like served it up on a tee for Stastny there. Like, I don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Shea Weber was, he had a terrible game, but he's not been playing very well, I would argue, most of the season, but especially, you know, the last month and a half, he's been downright bad. We've talked about it. Jonathan Drouin is falling back into his old habits, I guess, you know, making stupid passes at bad times when he should be getting off the ice or making an easier play. He's just sort of trying to force things that aren't there. I've been one to sort of want to give it a bit of time to breathe, but some of the coaching decisions we're seeing are a bit frustrating in that they feel very, very, very familiar. And that's another thing that, I don't know, maybe we'll talk about it a bit later, but that's something that's kind of getting a little annoying, where something's not working and they don't adjust, right? I mean, I can even just start off with the power play. You know, it looked good when Alex Burrows took it over to begin with and they started doing that big drop back pass that everyone was doing.
I hate that.
But it was working for the Canadiens for a little while, but teams have adjusted. And now they look like that team that could not, they don't even, can't even get set up anymore.
There's nothing adjusting. I saw Staal, Weber, and Drouin on the power play. I watched them get zero zone entries.
Yep.
Give away the puck over and over and over. I mean, what is going on? Look.
And just, sorry to cut you off there, but player usage too, it feels very familiar. And I don't know if that's, again, just because it's been a weird season with ability, like practice time and or whatever. But, you know, it feels like, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss kind of thing. With how certain players get, you know, protected and how certain players get not protected, I guess.
Well, that's interesting. He was definitely mixing the lines up last night.
Which in the third period, yeah, when the game was over. Yeah. I mean, the second period when the game was done and they had mixed the lines at that point.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, and certain people don't see, like, Jonathan Drouin had a terrible game. He didn't lose any ice time. He was still going out there on the power play. He's still going out there all, like, I don't know. Some of it is just very odd to me. Like, Philip Deneau, who I think had an okay game, but he's not the guy to get you back into a game offensively. And so, but he was still, I think he had the most ice time. And I know part of that maybe is penalty kill and stuff, but to me, that's a little bit crazy. I think I saw the ice time. He was the most among forwards, I think, or up there. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to do. It's just this week. And especially since it started on actually quite a promising note with a pretty, what seemed like a sort of a character defining win. You know, they came back, they were down 2-0 to the Oilers and they came back in the third period and won it in overtime. And Eric Staal got the overtime winner.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was like almost a perfect way to start.
Wrote themselves.
Yeah.
The Montreal Mystique.
Yeah. And you thought maybe, okay, this is a big win against a team they're chasing in the standings. You know, they had Toronto and then Winnipeg. And, you know, Toronto's been a real tough out for the Habs, well, a real tough game for the Habs this year in general. But, you know, Winnipeg, Montreal have played pretty tight games. Except for, there's, you know, one on each side that were kind of blowouts here. But, like, I don't know. After the Edmonton game, even though the scores were close in the Toronto game and the first Winnipeg game, I mean, the Habs weren't even in those games. I don't care what people say about shots. They couldn't generate anything. And, you know, I was just watching those games, and they're just like, they're not on that level. And
well, it looked like they might never score another goal again. Like, they just, like, it was things that went in were basically lucky, the chances that were generated. And then for a while last night, no one was even shooting. Like, just got to the blue line and, like, fired it in. And nothing close, nothing dangerous. I don't know. I really don't know. And my fear is right now that, you know, anything Bergevin does looks now a little desperate, I think. The time to fix the back end was the off season. Didn't happen. When he saw what he had in terms of Edmondson and Sherratt, Edmondson, man, has had a tough week. Tough week. Couldn't believe he took a penalty again in the first minute of the game. Now they killed it off, but it basically set the tone for the rest of the night. All right, well, let's go backwards. I think you're right. And excuse me, I got a little frog in my throat. I had my first COVID vaccination shot yesterday, which seems to have amplified some cold stuff going on. So I don't know if you saw this on Netflix. There's a great thing by a comedy special by Nate Bargatze, but he's got this whole bit about how coughing in public is out. You're not allowed to do that anymore. So if you hear a cough over here, it's not the Rona. It's just the regular crud that kids bring in. I think you said it perfectly. It was a character-defining game on Monday. We saw the Canadians come back, which they don't often do. We saw a win in OT, which we, you know, very rarely see. We saw a veteran step up and make a great shot, and all was right with the world. So going into the rest of the week, you're like, okay, well, it's not perfect, but we're seeing more what we need to see in terms of energy and fight.
Right, but
and I thought just... even the first Toronto game, we saw a little bit of fight pushback there in the last couple of minutes. We wish you would have seen that, you know, in the second period or whatever, but or throughout the game, I guess, with the finish. But yeah, the Toronto game really sort of set us up for this Winnipeg back-to-back.
Yeah, I mean, well, the first sort of, don't want to say chinks in the armor, but I mean, after the Edmonton game, the news came out that Carey Price was hurt and wasn't going to play, and he wasn't traveling. But, you know, typically everything else about it was shrouded in mystery. No one knows what's wrong, when he got hurt, what's hurt, how long he'll be out. It's just sort of nebulous like it always is with Carey Price. And Brendan Gallagher, he got hurt, I think, in the Winnipeg game, the Edmonton game also, I believe. Or was it the Ottawa game?
Yeah, shot from Romanoff.
So, like, you know, first it'd be nice if the Habs defense would stop, you know, breaking his hand with shots. That'd be great, but...
Well, it's nice that they're letting the next generation get in on that.
So. I think it's, what, like the third or fourth time he's had his hand broken by a point shot from a Canadiens defenseman. But, you know, then this is the whole thing, right? We talked about how the Habs should be deep and be able to withstand something like this, but... Gallagher goes down and the team looks lost. And I understand he's an important player. That's not, you know, everyone understands he's like the engine and you know, that the guy on the team is probably should be the actual captain of the team, but that's neither here nor there. But the fact that they've kind of fallen off a cliff without him, I don't know. It's kind of depressing that they're again, typically like it's been sort of the entire Bergevin era, they're always one injury away from complete disaster. And I know these are two guys that are out, but, you know, that Toronto game, I see what you're kind of saying. They kind of pushed back, but, it you know, it was too late to push back at that point, I think. You know, Jake Allen did all he could to keep them in the game. Montreal was terrible. And you can say how much they dominated in the second period, which people were pointing to. And, yeah, they had zone time, but there maybe all that zone time in the second period, they maybe had one really good scoring chance. So, to me, right. it's like a football analogy, right? You can control the clock, but if you're controlling the clock, you know, you're only moving between the 20 and the 40, you know, the other team's 40, and you're not putting up points, or you're only getting a field goal, like, who cares? Because you need to score. So, like, it's nice to own the clock, and usually it means good things, but if you're owning the puck and the zone time on the outside and just shooting from, like, the again, we talked about it before, but shooting from outside, not getting into danger areas, not trying to find a way to make it hard for the goalie, then who cares? Every team will take that. You know, no one's gonna be worried about a wrist shot from the point, typically. I mean, I'm not saying they don't go in, but you can't just assume they're always going to go in. You can't assume it's always going to take a weird bouncer. So, I don't know. I was just very, really frustrated watching that game, and I knew people were going to sort of get excited, I guess. Not everyone, but some people would get excited about how well they played in the second period. But, you know, then again, the third period started, and then they were not there. And then Toronto just took the game over, you know. And they just showed that they have that much more, like, their top line has that much more skill where, you know, the three guys, apparently every Canadiens player got stuck behind the net on that Zach Hyman goal, and they just, Austin Matthews, they just skated away from everybody, like, they weren't even there. It was pretty impressive to watch, just how
I think that game that also set the sort of, sorry, I think yeah. that game really set the theme of, this is the week when Shea Weber has been shown to just not be, I mean, we've been talking about it forever, but I feel like there's been a sort of a desire to protect him, you know, because of who he is and what he's done. He's the captain of the team, and everyone says he might be slow, but he's tough and tough to play against and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that first goal, Austin Matthews on Shea Weber, he looked like a pylon. He just basically, he might as well have been standing still. And what we saw the rest of this week are just yeah. more examples of that. And It was ugly. And then, you know, you move to the Winnipeg game. Again, they give up a goal on the first shot of the game in the first minute. And who's on the ice? Shea Weber. Trying to do a weird little, like, I don't know what he was trying to do. He basically had the hash marks hunched over, trying to, like, get in the way of the shot. Goes off the post and in, and the Canadiens are chasing the rest of the game.
Yeah, the Shea Weber problem is a big one, just because we've talked about it. You know, you can limit him, you can try and protect him in terms of, like, limiting his ice time and having him sit, but the issue is the Canadiens have no one to fill his role. And you see, I saw people talking about it on Twitter. We're like, oh, you know, like, yeah, just trade Shea Weber or whatever, do something with Shea Weber. And I'm like, yeah, you know, realistically, I agree. Like, he either needs a break because maybe, like, you know, he is older, maybe the schedule is really wearing on him. That's, you know, because I'm not going to say anything, but, you know, maybe he needs a break and maybe he'll come back a little bit more rejuvenated and look a little bit fresher than he has this past weekend, you know, for most of the season. The other side of that is, if this is Shea Weber's decline and the steep decline that maybe a lot of us sort of predicted, then, you know, we don't have to relitigate trades, but if you want to actually look at the thing, did the kind of, like, we can, maybe I'll save this talk for later, but, you know, the way Shea Weber's play has been really bad and was really exposed the last three games. And it's a problem because these are teams you're going to see in the playoffs. It's not, you know, you might not see them. You're going to either be playing Winnipeg or Toronto in the first round. And likely, if by some miracle they get through the first round, they're probably playing one of those teams in the second round. So, excuse me. It's a big problem because, back to the way things have been coached, he's being thrown out there like he's still the guy. And, you know, Shea Weber was an excellent defenseman. And look, this happens to every player. You know, he was great, and he was the tough guy to play against in his own zone. He was that booming power play shot. He was all those things. But right now, he is not. And, you know, seeing him out there on the power play when you can't, the Canadiens, first of all, can't even get the zone to set up his shot. But, you know, teams know it, so he doesn't ever use his shot, so they're, you know, he gets forced to handle the puck and misplay it. In his own zone, like that goal last night where he just overskated the puck in front of the net, like, I mean, I know that happens, but, like, it just was like the cherry on top of a terrible week where he was exposed as a liability. And the problem now is, like we said, they have nowhere to go, though, from this. They have no, like, who are they bumping up in the lineup? Like, realistically, the way things are working earlier, you would have Petrie and Edmondson, who are actually working as a good pair, before they decided to change it up with the Sherrod injury to try and, I don't know, maybe Edmondson with some sort of magic elixir for Weber. But since they've shuffled those lineups without Sherrod, you know, Petrie's gone off a bit of a cliff playing with Kulak. So it's just been a bit of, it just hasn't been working at all. And again, it sort of speaks to the general lack of quality depth, which I think we thought they may have had, but it seems like they don't. And yeah, I don't know.
Well, they don't have depth on the D. I mean, the Otto Leskinen, I thought, played fine yesterday, but like, you know, he needs to be a depth guy. And as you say, like, what's their other choice? Look, Shea Weber may have been fantastic in his day, okay?
Yeah.
And he still might be really tough to play against in front of the net or in the corners, but he's not going to get faster. He's not going to magically find another gear. He hasn't been playing with 10-pound weights strapped around his ankle that he can just take off now that they're in a playoff run. He's not going to get faster. This is who he is. And the reality is, D have to be strong, they have to be fast, and they have to be able to move the puck. And he's one out of three, and that's not good enough for a top two defenseman. And the sooner that we just recognize that, the better off we're all going to be. Your point is, well, what's the other option? And I don't have a good answer for you, but we talked about last week, and I've said this very clearly, we need to manage his minutes. He needs to not play he can't play four games a week for the next 4 weeks. And you said quite reasonably, this is a proud guy. He's not just going to not play. The only thing I can think is that he's got a lingering issue and then maybe they announce he's injured and Petrie has to step up. My problem with that is then you have your top three players, at least in name, who are all injured. And, you know, hopefully Bryce is back next week. I was a big Allen supporter, a big believer. I know you're going to tell me we can't blame Allen for the losses this week, but I think it's fair to say he didn't look necessarily great on at least a couple of the goals last night and, you know, probably one or two the previous two games. So
he hasn't been perfect. I'm with you. He hasn't been perfect. I still think he's the best backup they've had in a while. And, the thing is, yeah, he hasn't been perfect. I'm sure there's probably, maybe not the Toronto game, but I think the two Winnipeg games, there's definitely goals he probably would like back. But the flip side of that is he got zero run support, you know? So
yeah. Yeah,
you know, the Canadiens scored in three games. They scored four goals, so that's not really a recipe for any kind of success against anybody. So, I think he played. I think he kept them in the first two games pretty well. I'm not saying he didn't give up any bad goals, but Toronto, he definitely kept them in that game. That game should have been.
You know what's funny?
5-1. You know what I mean? And
even after as bad a week as he's had, he's still got better numbers than Carey Price. So that kind of tells you. You know,
yeah,
where we're
and
at.
And like I said,
with goaltending in this team.
Like, I just think it's a symptom of, like, the team just not playing well. I guess it's just, I don't know, natural that he might let in a bad goal here and there. I don't know. But, yeah, this sort of last three games sort of has a lot of Habs fans, us especially, like, exacerbated. Like, what's to do, right? The trade deadline is Monday, tomorrow. We're recording here. It's Sunday. Like, what can be done to fix it? And, you know, we've talked about it. About, you know, timing-wise, if it'll matter. I mean, the restrictions have been relaxed a bit, so that's a positive. But who can the Canadiens get to help their... Because I still think the need is defense. I still think it's left-hand, left side, and puck-moving defensemen, which is an issue we talked about. Well, we've talked about us. Everybody have talked about it. I brought it up at the beginning of the year, their lack of mobility on the back end, but it...
You did. Just like Per Maguire. I told you a long time ago.
No one listens to me. If only they listen. Anyway. no, but, you know, something's got to be done. And, you know, the big name that people were thinking was Mattias Ekholm. But, you know, probably he's off the market. If Nashville's in the playoff spot. So they're not going to want to trade him. So who do you go to
next? I want Vince Dunn. We're probably getting Kulikov. Right? I mean, that's just the way it goes.
Well, yeah, Bergeron's not going to make any big trades. That's the thing, right? Nothing to rock the boat too much. You know, like he brought in Eric Staal, but again, he didn't upset anything. He got rid of a couple of mid to late draft picks, so it's not.
Can we just be real about Eric Staal? And I hate to say this because, look, there are veterans who are like Corey Perry, and there are veterans who are like Eric Staal. And so far, look, Corey Perry was a great pickup and has done great for this team. And I don't, look, it's only a week, and I don't think we can like blow him out of the water. But he's going to have to be a specialist guy. He's going to have to be a depth guy. I don't think you can play him up the middle. I think it's time to end the Kokonyemi on the wing experiment. Yeah. I think whatever he loses in terms of faceoffs, he gains in possession and offensive creativity. I think part of the problem we saw this week was down the middle, and we need to fix that. The other problem is goal-scoring touch. And as much as I don't think it's smart for the player, I think you might have to think about bringing Cole Caulfield up, not just to give him a taste of the big time, but because you actually have a need now. So I know we started on trade. Let's finish our trade deadline conversation. Let's talk about the Cole Caulfield problem, because it's not a problem in one way, but at the same time, there are lots of risks associated with trying to advance him too soon. We've seen it before in Montreal, but let's finish the trade deadline conversation. I'm with you. We need to pick up defense. At a minimum, a depth defenseman. Ideally, a top four on the left side. And we need to sort of I'm out on Kulak. I don't believe in the player anymore. I don't understand what's happening and the decisions that get made. You know what else I'm out on? I'm out on dumping the puck in and rimming it around the outside every single time they enter the zone. I know that those things sound like they're different, but I actually think they're similar. Our defensemen don't have any ability to do anything else. When they get the puck and they can't make a quick pass up through the middle zone, they're just dumping it and rimming it around the outside over and over and over, and we're seeing teams adapt to that. Anyway, look, tell me why I can't have Vince Dunn. I want Vince Dunn. Connor, make it happen.
Well, I think Vince Dunn is the type of player that the Canadians need, you know, again. Puck moving, skates well. I think the expectation on him from you might be a little high. I don't think he's, you know, necessarily a long-term solution. I think he's, you know, I think he's what people want Victor Mete to be, if that sort of tracks, if you know what I'm trying to say. Like, Vince Dunn produces more, better shot, better decision-making, a bit stronger. You know, I think people want Mete to be like Vince Dunn. But I also think that Vince Dunn maybe is a borderline number four defenseman, which definitely the Canadians can use. So I think that's not a bad place to go. But again, you know, the Blues right now are sitting in a playoff spot. Granted, they're in a bit of a dogfight, but they're still sitting in a playoff spot. So it's going to be tricky to sort of get them to pry one of their defensemen, starting defensemen off them at the trade deadline. I don't know. And, like, this is the year, I think, if Canadians, like we've sort of talked about, are kind of all in based on all their moves they've made in the offseason, in-season moves they made by firing all the coaches, stuff like that. I mean, why is this should be the year, especially, like, I know how protective Marc Bergevin is of his first-round draft picks and how they're gold and, you know, nothing ever goes wrong with them, even though we've seen they go very wrong. This is a year, I think, that you can trade a first-round pick. I mean, be creative, even if you have problems. Look at what Tampa Bay did to get David Savard.
Yeah, that was wild.
Detroit, right? Yeah. And what is it? You know, they got pretty much 75% of his salary retained by the two teams.
Right.
So they can make it work under the cap. I mean, it's a little frustrating and circumventy, but still, if they can do it, it's outside-the-box thinking. And, you know, the double low blow there is it's Julien Brisebois, who the Canadians had in their building and let leave. But, you know, that's another conversation for another day. You know, that's one of the things I think with Marc Bergevin that gets, I don't know, I don't want to tangent off on that. Maybe we'll talk about it later. But sometimes it feels like there's a little, not much creativity on his end about how to get things done. Or maybe a little too protective. You know, he likes to talk about, and maybe it's part of his, why he gets to keep his job for as long as he does, is the future, the prospects, you know. I don't know. it's going to, like you said, you want Vince Dunn or you want Ekholm, but you're going to end up with Kulikov. So, or, you know, Vatanen, which, again, they're not bad, but at this point, those guys would have been nice to add if the defense was playing well, but they're really not. So they need someone who can actually eat minutes and play. And that isn't just a specialist, but they're probably just going to get a specialist. Of course, my deep fear is, you know, Bergeron doubles down on the grit and toughness and looks to add more size because, you know, character and et cetera.
I mean, but you couldn't be surprised if he did that. At the same time, you can't look at this lineup and be like, you know what we need? A little more slow and tough. We still have enough slow and tough.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time he's done that, so we'll see. I mean, I actually don't think he's going to do anything at this point.
I think that's a good bet at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly, which to me sort of speaks to... It's definitely a blind spot he has, or I don't know if it's a blind spot, but a troubled spot. Like, I know he traded for Eric Staal, but his unwillingness to sort of make in roster in-season adjustments in terms of trading players and stuff is... a thing. It's like, I know, but you can't do it every year. You can't, no, we can't make big trades on your roster every in season, every year and all that stuff, but something's not right.
But in fairness, Connor, this is the, I mean, in Mark Bergevin's tenure, there has never been so many changes to the active roster over the last 6 months as this year. And so, you know, he doesn't like to tinker with a roster, but let's be honest, this roster has changed so much. You're not necessarily tinkering anymore. I mean, you're basically putting together all these spare parts and trying to make a run. Here's the thing that I don't like. I'm starting to see NHL insiders talking about how this year doesn't actually matter and it's all experience for next year. And I just think, my God, Weber a year older, Price a year older. Sure, our young kids a year older, but who are you going to lose from the active roster in the next year? You know, what defenseman's going to be ready to take the next step next year? Like, I just don't... I saw a great tweet last night, and I'm going to... Hold on, I'm just going to... I'm going to vamp for a second and find it so I can read it out, because I really want your take on it, but for me, it sort of put everything in really good context. Where is it? This is really good. This is good radio.
No, right, I can, I will vamp for you. But the other thing that kind of worried me about this whole thing is I saw a tweet, and it kind of cut me deep, and not cut me deep, but like it struck a nerve, because I'm like, this is definitely what's going to happen, just because the Canadians are in such a good position to make the playoffs right now. So the person, someone, they wrote, you know, so this is what I see happen. The Canadians are going to make the playoffs, get bounced in the first round, and Mark Bergevin is going to get a contract extension because they made the playoffs.
Yeah, worst that, possible outcome for me.
Right?
So that's, could it be like, any worse?
It's like, you know, nothing changes. They didn't do anything. They made no noise. It actually kind of was a bad year, and had this not been the weird alignment that it is now, the Canadians are probably on the outside, are on the outside looking in. So, yeah, it's... And I take your point about tinkering with the lineup. I know he made big changes in the offseason, but... I just mean the offseason is where he does all his work, and that's fair. Most GMs do that, but, you know, you see teams make trades in season to sort of change things up if they're not working. I know it's not a great example, but Laine for Dubois. You know, that's a trade that happened in season.
Winnipeg won that trade.
Well, I'm just saying, if something's not working, and there's only so many times you can fire your coaches before you have to change something on your team, and sometimes it takes that. Taking out a guy and bringing in someone new, it's just changing things up on your roster. And, like, I know you, like, yes, they added Eric Staal, and I do want to touch on the Eric Staal part of and the coaching stuff. Like you said, we'll talk about that after our trade talk. But, you know, I think they needed to do something a bit more drastic.
Okay, let me.
The way the team's been playing.
I tend to agree with you. We desperately need a trade on defense, and we're probably not going to get one. I Bergie, if you're listening, prove me wrong. I want to be wrong. this for me is the tweet that sort of summarizes where I'm at with the Habs. It's from KCCO VCR, whatever that means. The Habs look like a team where half the core is 2 years too late for a cup run, and the other half is 2 years too early. Bergevin is doing his best to stitch these two halves together for runs this year and next year. And that, to me, I don't know what you I'm curious your take on it, but that to me sort of sums up where we are. We've got older players who are not in their prime and younger players who haven't quite hit their stride. And even 1 year on either end of those, I think, would be in a better position. Right now, stitching those two together is going to take the ultimate glue. And I'm not sure Bergevin has the ability.
That's, well, we, yeah, I totally agree with that. I think we were talking of something kind of like that last week. We were saying, by the time these kids are going to be ready, they're still going to have all these other holes now with guys like Weber probably on the way out, Price on the way down, you know, Petrie a bit older, Sherrod a bit older. You know, there's going to be, it doesn't seem to be lining up properly. There's not enough guys that are roughly the same age entering the same part of their careers together. And we can talk about if that's development, but it's also, you know, roster construction. And, you know, people like to say how Bergevin makes really smart trades, and I think he does. But the problem is there's more to a trade or making a roster than just bringing in, I don't know how it sounds, how I say it, but like, you can win a lot of trades, but if your team's not winning, then you're not building a good team. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Weber was good for a while. You know, the Deneau trade, everyone will agree, was a very big win for the team. You know, he's brought in, you know, Anderson. The trades, Petrie, the trades have been good, but for some reason it hasn't translated. I mean, not all of them have been perfect, but for the most part, he makes pretty shrewd trades, I would argue. Nothing that rocks the boat too much, but they're pretty shrewd. But the team hasn't found success, so I don't understand. You can sit here and tell me how, oh my God, he's such a great trade negotiator, which fine, but apparently he's not a very good team builder, because to that point I agree. The team is at least 2 years away on either side. You know, they're 2 years too old. The guys are 2 years, the old guys are 2 years too old, and the young guys are 2 years too young. So it's not going to mesh up. Like, you know, by the time, you know, Kokanyemi and Suzuki and like Caulfield and all those guys are ready to really sort of hopefully develop into the players they're going to be, they're going to still have these giant holes they need to fill. And just to piggyback off that, I kind of saw Brian Wild sort of post like a tweet, an overly optimistic tweet, which kind of got on my nerves. I didn't obviously go after him or anything, but like, the window's opening because they have all these young prospects coming. I'm like, yeah, you can look at it positively.
That's how it works.
You know, until you see these young prospects do something in the NHL, it's not a window opening. It's potential. That's all it is. And yeah, you hope it works out. You know, there's reason to be excited with some of these guys and the way they've looked. But until you see them do it in the NHL, it doesn't mean a damn thing. And, you know, I think it's kind of funny now how everyone's sort of changing their tune on what this season is for the Canadians a little bit. You know, mentioned, you know, it doesn't matter. It's about experience, blah, blah, blah. No, this was a year they went, they spent a lot of money. They wanted to be competitive, and they're not. So it's another year, another same kind of thing. I mean, I don't know. I was just thinking last night about how it's just like Mark Bergevin's legacy, like, you know, just these disastrous collapses in seasons where they fall apart when it matters most, because it seems like that's what they do. I don't know. Maybe I'm just angry because of what I saw last, but I'm just thinking, like, especially the last, what, five seasons, it's been just calamity almost. For the Canadians.
It's been tough. It's been tough. Look, where are we going now? Are we going to Cole Caulfield or are we going to Eric Staal? Where do you want to go?
Let's go to Eric Staal. We'll get to the good. We'll save some good news for the end. So we can be a little happy on the way out. But yeah, I'll start talking about Eric Staal. Yeah, I'll let you start. You want to talk about it so you can get us going.
Look, Montreal Mystique overtime winner aside, I don't know what's going on with this player. I'm not sure I appreciate the pickup. I know that the sample size is small and maybe he's going to find his game, but the offense seems to die on a stick. And I see him lose battles for the puck. I don't see him do much to sort of contribute. I don't know. It doesn't look like a good move right now, especially because they've switched the lineup to sort of accommodate him and his skill set. He's a specialist that should be used more rarely, in my opinion. And if I see him on the first power play unit again, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, 100%. When the Canadians acquired him, we both were sort of saying, you got to temper your expectations. He should be in a limited role. You know, it's not Eric Staal from even 3 years ago. So, you know, I think everyone was expecting him to sort of get a fourth line role. He could either play on the wing with Evans there, or, you know, him and Evans could switch it up. And, you know, if you want to worry about his speed, you throw Paul Byron on that line and you should be okay. But instead, he's gotten a prominent role. And I don't understand it. I mean, just because, A, he's, well, new to the team, so he doesn't isn't necessarily comfortable with how they play their systems. So, you know, you might want to ease him in a bit more. And, yeah, like, why is he on the power play? Again, in his day, yes, he was a very useful player, but based on what we've seen this year, why are we rewarding a guy? And yes, you could talk about how he was in Buffalo, and that I'm sure played a part in how, you know, he was playing, you know, about his production, but you still gotta let guys earn it. I mean, this is what I was talking about with the coaching. This feels like something Julien would do. You get this veteran guy who's been around the block, and we're gonna play him all, we're gonna play him a bunch. I don't understand it. I think overexposing Eric Staal is a problem, and it's pushed Kotkaniemi to the wing for some stupid reason, and now he's dying on that line with Phil Deneau, who, you know, apparently just send out, like, I don't know, he's not someone who's going to help someone produce offensively at all, so why are we doing that? You know, I mean, clearly Brendan Gallagher was he's the engine of the team, but he's also the engine of that line, so when he's not there, it doesn't look very good. And I think making Kotkaniemi go to the wing is sort of a foolish move. If anything, you know, I feel like Suzuki would be the guy that should go to the wing, just because he's been, I feel like, struggling a lot more this year than Kotkaniemi has. And yeah, it's just baffling. I mean, yeah, he scored the goal in overtime, but I was surprised that why the hell is Eric Staal in overtime? Why is he's not a player. Got away with it fine. I mean they probably got away with it because Edmonton played Connor McDavid for about 4.5 of the 5 minutes of overtime, but you know, it worked, but it was shocking. I'm like, you know, how's he going to keep up? If that puck rims around, like, who knows what happens, right? He scored, but those shooting to the far end from those boards like that can, you know, that's a recipe for disaster in overtime if it doesn't hit the net. But anyway.
Yeah, agreed.
It's just confusing to me that they're deciding to sort of thrust him into this role that it's clearly beyond him at this point of his career. And I'm not trying to, like, even like we were talking about Weber, right? I don't mean to, you know, you don't want to disparage the person because these are obviously great players, but, you know, this is what happens in sports. You get to a certain point and you can't play the way you used to, and your game kind of falls off, and you got to realize that if you want to still be effective, you got to become smarter. And certain players have done that very well, and certain players so far, at least, you know, Weber hasn't done it yet, and Staal hasn't, again, to your point, it's a small sample size, but I think that the coaching is doing him no favors by overexposing him out there when he should be in a very limited sort of, like you said, like a role player. Like, he has a specific role on the team, but they're just giving him too much. Like, you know, too many regular minutes, too much power play time, and I don't understand it. So, yeah, I don't know. It's the coaching thing this week has kind of got me a little off kilter, because it does look very Claude Julien-esque. And then it may be the conspiracy theory in my brain, you know, the conspiracy theorist in my brain was like, well, maybe this is a mandate from on high. Maybe it's Mark Bergevin saying, this is what you got to do. And if that's, I don't think that's true, but if that was true, then that's an even bigger problem. But it's just interesting that it's sort of the way all three coaches have sort of coached the same way so far. So anyway.
Ducharme has not had a good week, and I'll just tell you two little moments. The first one is that he denied that Price was injured in the post-game question and answer period. And he didn't, like, finesse it and say, well, he's being evaluated, he's a big part of our team, we're hoping he's going to be good to go, but of course, if he needs rest, we're going to rest him. He said, no, he's not injured. And that was, of course, proven to be false, and all the journalists in the room knew it. And I think in that moment, Ducharme did not look great. His comments after the game last night were just as confusing. I mean, he was talking about really sort of micro details and you know, what they have to do in the neutral zone, and completely ignoring the fact that his defense, you could have thrown out a couple of chairs on the ice and would have done a better job than our defense last night. It was a joke. It was unbelievably bad. And for him not to at least nod toward the reality that the fan base and everybody else knows based on that game was really confusing to me. And look, he hasn't been thrust into this spotlight. He's going to have to figure it out. I liked Dom Ducharme better when we were doing letting the young kids play, having it be fun, those small passes. For some reason, since Staal has arrived, the excitement on the ice has gone down. And I don't know, it seems silly to try to connect those two as if, you know, a cause and effect relationship exists. But this team this week is as bad as we've seen them play all year, and maybe for the last couple of years. I mean, just some really bad defensive lapses, lack of offense, goaltender who does a lot but still can't bail them out. So,
well, it seems like there's no creativity on offense. And I'm not saying they were one of the more creative teams, but like it seems like with the rejigging of the lines, it's just all dried up. And I don't know why it's taken, you know, it took to the third period of a game they were getting blown out of to sort of change things up. But, you know, for as good as Corey Perry's looked all season, and he's been probably one of the better acquisitions, well, you know, considering what everyone was expecting from him, I feel like they may be kind of trying to overexpose him a bit too. Like, I know he's going well, but he's partly going well because he's in a bit more of a limited role. And I'm not saying he's playing first line minutes, but excuse me, he's not. He was in a perfect role that worked for him in terms of where he is in his career and what you expect from him. And you don't want to push him too hard or too much because then you're going to get diminishing returns, I feel. So the same thing with, you know, we talked about Eric Staal. And I don't know why they felt the need to redo the lines to, like you said, to accommodate Eric Staal. Like I said, you stick him, and everyone thought, you stick him on the fourth line. Him and Evans can kind of, he can help Evans mature and grow, and he can help the guys in faceoffs, even though, you know, Eric Staal's not necessarily a fake soft guru, but, you know, he's been around the block a few times, he knows some tricks and all that stuff. Have him work like that, but instead he's in this weird prominent role, and since they've done that, like you said, something's gone off. And yes, Gallagher's not there, and he's a big part of it, and still, though, they should have more depth to overcome Brendan Gallagher not being in the lineup. And I think the other thing they tried to do is accommodate Phil Deneau. You know, usually Gallagher, Deneau, Tatar. So instead of rejigging it another way, they put Kokanyemi on that one to try and keep it sort of, I don't know, going offensively, even though, you know, going offensively this year was not very great. And I think they probably should have just rejigged it another way and put, you know, Deneau with a bit more of a defensive role with more defensive players and maybe given Kokanyemi Tatar and have someone else on his wing so it's a bit more offensive. That's not what they decided to do for whatever reason. Who knows why. And now we're dealing with this thing where the Canadiens are back to a team that can't score. And when you can't score and you can't defend and you can't get bailed out by your goalie, you're asking for trouble. So that's what we saw this week.
Yeah, well, that's where we are. let's talk about some positive notes. Cole Caulfield steps onto the ice, his professional debut for the Laval Rocket, having won the Hobie Baker Award for the most valuable player in the NCAA Tier 1 division. As if, I mean, I saw Joey Alfieri say, look, I kind of don't want him to score in his first game because that's just going to amp up the expectations beyond all, you know, reason. And what does he do? He scores two goals, one from his office, let's say, and the other, which just showed his speed and tenacity on the puck. And then in his next game, less than 24 hours later, puck goes off his foot because he's right in the right spot and generating options. Exciting professional debut for Cole Caulfield. Did you get to watch any of him other than the highlights? Did you? I almost paid $7.99 to watch Laval.
I have RDS, obviously, so.
Oh, nice.
I watched a bit of it, as much as I could. It was fun to watch. And, you know, it was almost more enjoyable. Obviously, it was more enjoyable watching Laval than it was watching the Canadiens this week. Yeah, I mean, look, it couldn't have been any better. I mean, he could make, unless he had like a Ryan Poehling sort of debut when Ryan Poehling had the like hat trick and the shootout winner against the Leafs there. Which also, you know, like you said, skyrocket expectations. Although, if you're actually paying attention, Paling's having quite a good year with Laval as well. Yeah, I mean, look, it was kind of everyone was expecting, and also, like you said, a little bit dreading because he delivered what everyone expected, and now people expect it's never going to stop. So, like, I think Marc Dumont sort of was like, had a post today about, like, oh, Laval has a game, and it was like, you know, 8 in the morning. He's like, did Cole Caulfield score yet? And it's like, you know, there are going to be games where he doesn't score, but he definitely has that. It's clear he has that goal scoring, whatever, touch, je ne sais quoi. You know, the guys that can do it have it, and he's got it because, you know, he makes it work, like you said, in a bunch of ways. So it's exciting. I mean, obviously, with the Canadians not being able to score, the temptation is there to sort of call him up. I think a lot of people think that. I think he can help, but I think the Canadians' issues are beyond one. Cole Caulfield. I also think it's a lot to sort of heap that kind of pressure on a kid who's, you know, just 20. Sort of have him come up and be like, okay, now fix the problems. Go, you know?
That's one way to look at it, Connor. The other way to look at it is this team is so bad. If he doesn't produce, it's the team's fault, not his fault, right? If he was being brought up to be the cherry on top of the perfect cake, in some ways, that would be a little bit more pressure. I don't think anybody thinks the Montreal Canadiens' fortunes rise or fall based on the play of Cole Caulfield. I don't know what the right thing to do is. I mean, in some ways, the player has to earn his spot. If he keeps scoring in Laval, I think you kind of have to bring him. I mean, it looks like professional malpractice not to bring him up. At the same time, I do worry about his health in terms of injury, in terms of being targeted. I do worry about trying to push him too far too fast. But there are players who are just born to play in the NHL, right? And they didn't send the first or second pick last year to the minors, right? So there are reasons that these players find themselves in big games at big times, and if he continues to produce, if he continues to do the right things, let's bring him up. Let's give him a shot. He's earned it. He's not the answer, but maybe he can be a spark.
Fair enough. Yeah, he definitely that if he's a spark and he's like the even though it's a young team, that injection of sort of youthful enthusiasm, for sure he can help. I just mean there will be a segment of people if he doesn't score every game or, you know, score as much as they think he should, that will start, you know, turning on him. It doesn't take much to turn on. In Montreal, it doesn't take a lot for the fans to turn on someone. So we'll see. I would like to see him with the Canadiens. I think you're right. If he keeps producing, you can't really deny the fact. Although, you know, we can tread that back with Jonathan Drouin if you want in Tampa Bay, but we don't need to. The thing is, like, it's watching what I watch. Like I said, I couldn't watch all of it, you know, as you can attest. It's kind of hard to sit down and watch a hockey game, especially the one yesterday afternoon, you know, when you have a little kid. The little kid's running around. You can't really be like, no, I'm watching an NHL hockey game. So it doesn't really play very well in the room, so.
Well, I want to tell you soon you will be able to do that because he'll be watching too. But you're not quite there yet. It's coming.
Fair enough. It's coming. When he wants to watch, he wants to watch what he wants to watch and not what I want to watch. And Lord knows I've watched enough Blippi in my life that I don't need to watch any more of it. But I was just saying the thing that stood out to me is I remember listening to a friend of the pod, Sean Campbell, talking about how you watch an AHL game and sort of see who's ready to be called up or who's like more NHL ready. And it's not necessarily about who's scoring, but about who sort of stands out and looks not ahead of the play, but you know, they stand out and they people can't make plays to them because they don't see the game the way they see it. Or like if you see a guy who's NHL ready knows like, okay, you should send me the puck over here so I can get it. And the guy who can't make the play to the, like if Cole Caulfield's asking for a puck in a certain spot and a winger can't get it to him the way he wants it, then it's more on the winger and not on Caulfield because he knows this is where I have to go. This is where it needs to go. Like, guys that stand out in a way like that. And from what I saw, and granted, I didn't have, obviously, the the view of the whole ice, but Caulfield just stood out in that way where he was, like you said, apart from making things happen, he was all over the place, putting himself in the right areas, getting into the right spots, being just generally dangerous. And, you know, even though he got a bit of a cheap shot yesterday, it was nice to see Michael Pezzetta beat the crap out of that guy after. I don't know if you saw it, but yeah, a guy took a bit of a run at him. And
yeah, there's more of that. There's more of those things coming, right? He's going to be sure. He's going to have a target on his back. That's just how it goes. You notice him every shift, and I think that's the thing that Campbell says about like these players. Like, you can't help, your eye is drawn to them because they're doing something that just is beyond the ordinary within the game. And here's the reason we might see him sooner rather than later. The Rocket have a week off, I understand. So, you know, you called him up, he sits in a hotel room for a week, he practices a couple times, plays two games, and then what are you going to do with the player? You're going to have him sit, you know, at home and get to know the city? Or you guys are in lockdown right now, so I don't really know what he's going to do. Or are you going to have him come up and practice with the big club, you know? Go to the Bell Center, meet his teammates. You know what I mean? Like, this is the time where we might, it's not impossible, we see him draw in for a game.
Yeah, that would be good. And then, you know, from there, it's all on him, I guess. But, yeah, we'll see. I think, logically, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. My concern is, again, how things are being managed at the NHL level. You know, I understand you want to bring him in. And I'm not saying you got to play him on a top line. You can play him on a fourth line and work him in on the power play. But I don't know. Just the way things have sort of been going lately, I just don't want him to get buried behind a player that he shouldn't be buried behind, if that makes any sense.
I'll say. Jake Evans looked amazing last night, and he's a fourth-line player. I mean, honestly, he and Byron were the best Canadians last night. So there are opportunities. I mean,
for sure. I'm not saying you got to throw him into the top line and give him 20 minutes or 50. You know, that's not what I'm saying, but I guess I'm just concerned that if the coaching seems to be, the coaching style seems to be the same across the board, like I mentioned, you know, Therrien to Julien to Ducharme, there's a lot of connective tissue in how the game is coached right there so far. A lot of similarities, a lot of similar tendencies that makes me concerned that, you know, you don't want to see a kid like that make a mistake and then ride the pine, if you know what I mean. You know, if you're not going to play him.
No, I hear you.
And live with any little mistakes that might come. I mean, they might not, but if they come, which is probably going to happen because he's 20 years old and it's the NHL and it's, you know, it's fast and it's, you know, it's the show. He might be nervous. Anyway, I just don't want to have that happen. I don't want to see him sort of get, I don't know, like get benched for making a little mistake when you watch Jonathan Drouin go out and make like 17 turnovers and still get top power play time and doesn't lose much ice time. That's the kind of stuff that's just going to sort of grind my gears. If he comes up and they kind of like, I don't want to see Caulfield come up and play 5 minutes either. You know, that would be my concern. Because they're so worried about having to win and make the playoffs and, you know, I don't know. That's just, that would be my ultimate, like, what's the point then? Leave him in Laval. Like, you know.
And that might be ultimately where he plays most of his games in terms of this season. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they manage it. I think it's nice for fans to have something positive to latch on to this week. It is totally on brand for Canadians fans to now put all of our eggs in the Cole Caulfield basket because we literally have nothing else to hope for at this point, given the play of the Canadians this last week. It's hard to know what the right thing to do is. I'm always reminded of Gord Miller's sort of adage that you want players overripe, not underdeveloped, and that you do more damage by promoting people too quickly. The only thing I'll say is there are also players who were born to play, who were born for the big time, and if he continues to do all the things right, and makes his coaches happy and doesn't only produce offensively, but is good without the puck and earns a spot. I think it's just as damaging not to give him an opportunity. So let's see what happens, Connor. I am like most Canadiens fans right now, grasping at straws. So It is. We are in the middle of the Mucho Hockey month, and we have a game tomorrow, Connor, against Toronto, our old favorite. Let's talk about the week ahead. So we have Toronto on Monday, Calgary Wednesday, Calgary again on Friday, and then immediately an afternoon game Saturday against Ottawa. It's hard to get too excited. I guess if I want a glimmer of hope, I have to think Calgary has been terrible this year, even though they played Montreal pretty hard the last time they met. I don't know. How do you see this week going?
I mean, who knows, right? It's just, with this team, who knows? I mean, one thing that, I mean, the Toronto game, I'd like to say is going to be competitive, but just going back on the way I'm thinking, it seems like every game Montreal and Toronto have played, Toronto seems to be getting better and better. And Montreal is not getting worse, but not necessarily getting as obviously good as Toronto. So it's just the reality. I mean, Toronto's on a bit of a heater right now. Sorry, hot streak, heater, whatever. But, you know, the game against Ottawa, they were kind of lucky to outscore the Senators 6-5, so maybe they're ripe for a... Them and their apparently invincible goalie, Jack Campbell, are ready for a bit of a come-back-to-earth moment a little bit. You know, it seems it kind of can happen when you have a game like that where you kind of get a bit lucky when you can sort of win a shootout like that. Calgary, I agree, they've been a bit of a... Well, Calgary and Ottawa have been pretty bad this year, but for whatever reason, they seem to enjoy playing the Canadiens. So, I don't know. Well, hopefully Montreal can take advantage and really... In terms of the playoff chase, I know they have a bit of room right now, right? They're ahead of the Flames by, 6 points. So it'd be nice to get a bit more... You know, put a bit more distance between them and Montreal to start, even though... It's kind of interesting if you're looking at the standings, right? I mean, there's Toronto, 59, and the Jets and the Oilers are 53, 54, and then Montreal, 43. So there's a bit of, you know, there's clearly a gap in terms of which teams, the top teams in the rest of the division. And then Ottawa, right? Ottawa, I hate to say scares me, but for whatever reason, they seem to have the tonic for Montreal.
Well, they're playing with house money. It doesn't matter. They're at the bottom, and they are building up this core of young players. I mean, I find Ottawa to be so fascinating because it is not difficult to criticize their management choices, but somehow they've been able to come up with a competitive team that, you know, they're definitely not making the playoffs, but they look like they're setting themselves up.
Well, it's interesting to sort of think about it, right? Because, I mean, obviously we don't know how it's going to play out. But Ottawa has, this would be the third time they're doing this since, well, I mean, yeah, since they 93 when they came into the league. But they've done it, they've done a tear down and build back up at least twice, right? There was the Alfredson core and they tore it down. And then there was the sort of the one that just got it torn down with like Erik Karlsson and Bobby Ryan, those guys. And like they had some runs. I wouldn't say they were perfect, but they had some runs. And now they're doing this next one. And it's just interesting to see that. I guess they kind of know what they're doing when they build up their teams, even though it's obviously been different managements and coaches and things like that. I mean, the interesting thing I'll be watching Eugene Melnyk not want to pay them. But
that's it.
That's not our problem. I get what you're saying with Ottawa playing with house money, but it would just be nice to see the Canadiens sort of... I mean, I know they kind of, when they beat them 4-1, they kind of dominated that game, but... I don't know. I mean, when you dominate a game 4-1 and then, you know, what was it, the following game get kind of hammered down. Yeah, they lost 6-3 right after. I don't know.
But the thing that worries me about Ottawa is that they physically dominate Montreal. Like, that's the thing that, you know, whether it's Tkachuk pushing Weber over his own net or other players who just are taking the body in the way that Montreal doesn't seem comfortable with, that's the thing that stands out. I mean, not only that they have some skilled players, but they just are all physically on the same page in terms of what they're trying to do. And as much as I don't like that DJ Smith, he seems to be effective in that role with that team. I take your point. What team is going to show up? We have seen flashes of strong play. What we have not seen is a consistent effort. And we keep on saying they've got to get going. There's no more time to be wasting. in this division, but also in just in terms of stringing together the muscle memory of what it feels like to win consistently night on night. And with Gallagher out, we're facing...
he's not coming back.
This is an existential crisis, I think, for this team. Because Gallagher is as you say, he should be the captain of the team. He isn't on the ice. We miss his presence when he's not there. There doesn't seem to be another player that can step up and do what he does. And the team looks lost without that effective first line. So this could be another bad week for the Montreal Canadiens. I think...
Well, if I mean, look, I take your point about Gallagher, and I agree. He's obviously like the most important forward on the team. But again, you can't have your team completely crumble because someone... And I know they have more than just one injury, but they were getting along okay with before Gallagher went down. I know, like, there's a theory I listened to. Well, I used to listen to a podcast, a guy talking about football, where he talked about, you know, the Jenga piece of each team, and obviously excluding quarterbacks, because obviously if you lose your quarterback in football, you're finished. But the one player you can't really afford to lose because it all comes crashing down, and I think Brendan Gallagher clearly is that guy, because every time he gets hurt with the Canadiens, well, it wouldn't just be him, but like, it seems like, you know, since he's been out, it's been, and again, it's only been 1 week, but... It's been a pretty depressing week, so they're going to have to find a way to get it done without him because he's not coming back until the playoffs.
They're going to have to learn to play without their most important player. And as we've seen this week, moving Kokkinen to the wing is not going to work, and asking Eric Staal to pay above his ability is not going to work. So what is going to work? And I honestly think it starts with figuring out the defense and building out, because... Your goalie has given you a chance this week. You have been unable to do anything with that chance.
For sure. They got to do something. And if they come back, if we see the same lines or very similar lines to what we've seen last week, I don't know. I don't know if there's a stack of paper big enough for me to toss up into the air in frustration if I see the same exact, like, and nothing changing. Because then, you know, but we, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So. With that said, hopefully the Canadians can prove us wrong and ease our depression,
and our depression anyway. Your regular reminder to check your sources before you retweet any trade that seems to be good to be true.
Or too outlandish.
I had a friend send me a text last week that was way too good to be true, and I looked and they were spelling Canadians with an A. And he was totally sure that that was from an official account. You just got to be careful. So let's hope for the best tomorrow.
The Last Word on Habs podcast.
I honestly, brought to you as long as they're adding, I don't think it's necessarily a bad move.
Join us next week. Until then,
as much as I want to see them add a dominant player, I'm not sure that we're going to be there. But look, eat your Wheaties, say your prayers tonight, and let's hope for the best tomorrow.
Yeah, enjoy the trade deadline, everyone. And again, enjoy Habs Leafs and go Habs go, I guess.
Oh, anyway, man. That's with authority. I'm at right
now. Anyway.
Trade Habs trade.
Yeah, have a good week, everybody.